Again, to report to you from Oregon, from California, from all over the West, people have observed something traversing our skies that took anywhere from a minute by witnesses to 2 minutes to cross our skies in a very fiery way, floating across. I don't see how any meteor could take that long to cross our skies. There's no way. So about 10 seconds before I had to come back on the air, and I hope I made it, we got power back up again. We're trying to gather ourselves together here, and I do think we're on the air, but something has occurred. The power failure may be totally unrelated to the events in our skies. We'll find out. Peter Gersten is coming along in a few moments, assuming everything continues to tick along.
William Shatner here for Priceline.com.
All right, once again, there are a series of events going on that are pretty weird right now. We have had an event in our western skies with an object or objects, some saw many, traversing the sky for a very long period of time from west to east. At the bottom of the hour, as soon as Peter Davenport has had the opportunity to gather the witnesses and record things for you, we're going to have a comprehensive report put together for you. In the meantime, synchronistically, we had planned to have Peter Gersten on, and we are, in fact, going to have Peter Gersten on in a moment. Peter Gersten is our nation's only UFO attorney. And I hope all goes well. Again, we're on emergency power here. The entire valley in which I live has lost power. For whatever reason, it could be the fires in the San Bernardino Mountains, I suppose. That might have something to do with it. But something major has gone down for some reason. Hopefully not related to what happened in the skies. I have no idea what's going on, so bear with me, everybody, and we'll make it through all this as best we can. Peter Gersten, as I said, is our nation's only UFO attorney. He is filing a major lawsuit. He's got a brand new website up as of tonight. As a matter of fact, Keith Rowland is the man, the genius behind the construction of this excellent website, which I can't get to right now because I've got my computers down. This is going to be one of those nights, I can tell. So let us go to Peter Gersten, but stand by because we will be getting a report shortly from Peter Davenport. Peter, indeed, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Arthur. How are you?
Well, it figures. How am I? 10 seconds before I went back on the air, all the power went away for the entire valley here. I had to go to generator, and something is happening in our skies right now.
It's a great story. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
It's the ET's acknowledgement of the cause lawsuit today.
You think so?
Either that or a black project.
One of the two, huh?
Let me ask you something, Arthur. Did I lose stature since the last time I was on your show? Last time I was on, you introduced me as the galaxy's only UFO lawyer. Now, just the nation's?
Well, the world, certainly. The galaxy's probably the only UFO lawyer. Well, of course, we don't know about life elsewhere, Peter, so maybe that's stretching it a little bit, but certainly on this planet. And by the way, Peter, are you ever going to write a book?
I have a book proposal in the hands of some publishers right now.
Well, I've got a title for you.
What is it?
You ready for this?
Yep.
To Sue a Planet.
What was the name of that movie about the country, the little that roared?
The
mouse that roared.
Mouse that roared, that's right.
To sue a planet. Then I can get aid from a planet, possibly, to fund cause. That's what I need. It's been a very, very frustrating day.
Has it?
Those are my issues going on, but listening and hearing your voice, I get cheered up.
Well, I'm glad it cheers you.
But it's been very difficult. It has.
It's amazing when the power goes off here. I mean, it gets dark, brother. I had to light a cigarette lighter to get up to my short power pack to turn on a LED light in here so I could get enough light to stumble around to do the rest of what I had to do, get the generator going, and somehow I think we made it back almost on time. It's amazing. People have no idea how critical power is.
this is an amazing day. There's no question about it. Everybody must be experiencing something in their own way.
Well, you know, this entry of whatever it is there any way, Peter, that you can imagine something, a fireball, so described, or several of them, could take a minute to 2 minutes to traverse? I mean, I've seen meteors all my life. We all have. And I've even seen fireballs. But nothing that could ever approach enough time for someone, for example, as I read in the first hour, to call his family outside and say, come here and look at this.
You know what a depressing thought is? That probably we're never going to get an explanation as to what this is. There are things that have been flying in this sky for at least 50 years that no one has explained. And after 50 years, don't you think we need an explanation? And here's something else. Do you think we're really going to find out what this is unless it decides to expose itself fully in the daylight?
Well, the way things are going, it probably hit the power plant here in Brump.
It's amazing what's going on, and nobody really seems to care. At least the media doesn't.
Oh, but people do, Peter.
Well, but, you know, the problem is, let me regress for a second. You know, the principles cause was founded on. Number one, it believes that we are in contact, the people on this planet are in contact with another form of intelligence.
Yes.
The evidence is overwhelming. Two, it is against all secrecy surrounding this, whether it's the government, the military, UFO researchers, or the ETs themselves. It believes that we have an absolute right, an unconditional right, to know about contact, another life form coming in contact with our species. And four, it uses the judicial process to hopefully get at the truth. And by using the judicial process, I can hopefully one day go into court and prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury, to the public, to a national audience, that we are in this contact. The evidence is overwhelming.
All right. Actually, the quote here, and I've got your quote, it says, according to Gersten, quote, cause has undeniable evidence of an ongoing clandestine invasion, end quote. Yes?
I believe so. The same evidence that I've used in court for the 20 years I practiced criminal and civil law. I tried hundreds of cases, murder cases, major felonies, civil cases. I've gotten large awards for plaintiffs in cases. I've seen people I prosecuted and sent people away for life. The same type of evidence that can incarcerate an individual or win a large award, million-dollar award in a civil suit, the same type of evidence I can use to prove we're in this contact. Why is it being denied? Why is it being ignored? And one aspect of this contact seems to be a threat to our safety. And there is evidence for that. Why is that being denied?
Not only a threat to our safety, but a threat to our national security, and maybe a threat to the national security of every country in the world.
Well, I've said in the past that unless we take a close look at what this is, it could be a threat to our survival as a species.
Some people think it's going to be our savior, with regard to survival of the species, with all that is going wrong with the planet, you know, the environmental degradation we're suffering right now and all the rest of it. They really think that somebody will come along from out there and save our butts.
Yeah, as long as we look for somebody else to save us, it's never going to happen. The only people that can save us is ourselves. We have to take our power back and stop giving it away to some savior to help us with our problems. But that's beside the point. The bottom line seems to be is that, you know, with the lawsuit, which we will get into in a little while, the bottom line seems to be that when I talk about evidence of an invasion, of a threat,
yes,
it's too scary. It's too scary for the media. Oh, an invasion, ET invasion, an attorney has evidence? Whoa, we don't want to touch that.
Well, Bob Bigelow's organization, NIDS, I think you know, did a survey. And you may be exactly right, Peter. In other words, the survey seemed to reveal that if contact were realized, you know, like SETI, for example, got a signal that was 50 light years out or something like that, people would accept it readily and fairly calmly. On the other hand, if the evidence was suddenly thrown in front of their face, you know, like something landing on the south lawn of the White House or something Peter Gersten might come up with or pry from the hands of the government, it would not be accepted at all calmly. And so you may be right about that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. That's why what happened in Roswell is easier to digest than what's happening today in the skies. But unfortunately, we have to deal with what's happening today. And there's evidence of contact, and it's not through SETI. It's right here with us now. It's through personal contact experiences. It's through crop circles. It's through some of these objects that we see, possibly something that we are seeing actually tonight as we talk. As a matter of fact, everybody that's listening to us should be outside watching the sky and reporting back to us on cell phones what's going on. We should have instant replay on what's going on. Now, with all due respect to both of us, I think what we're saying is important, but what's important is what's flying in the sky. And everybody should be outside. Wake the town. Get everybody out of bed, outside, and watch what's going on, and let us know what's going on. We have an opportunity now. Something's being seen in the skies.
You know, it's interesting, Peter. I saw the shuttle re-enter, which is a controlled re-entry, and it was a spectacular thing to see. And it began as a fireball in the west, and then streaked across the sky, all in a matter of about 30 seconds or less. And that was a shuttle reentry. Now, I have no idea what could take a minute or 2 minutes to literally float across our skies as we're getting reports tonight. I mean, what the hell could that be? Nothing we have that I know of.
Well,
a meteor? I don't think so.
Tomorrow morning, we can either get an explanation, which we will accept, or we will not. The bottom line is, no matter what that is, whether it's a natural phenomena, whether it's something that we should be aware of, we should be outside watching it. So if it turns out to be a natural phenomena, so what? So the next time we go watch something out, because we can't rely on the government, we can't rely on the people in authority to tell us what's flying in our own skies.
Indeed.
We have to go out and find out ourselves, and we have to bring lawsuits, and we have to write the media and tell them, listen, you got to cover this.
All right, so you have gone to newspapers, right?
Well, I filed a lawsuit today.
I know.
Under Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, which requires the federal government to protect the states against invasion. The bottom line is that I think the evidence has to be brought to the attention of the species. It has to be covered by the media. It has to be treated seriously. It has to be treated professionally. There's evidence here. So on the idea that how best to get the media's attention without going under the Freedom of Information Act, because that has become totally impotent. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons of the frustration today is because the court denied my request to subpoena Greer and Davenport.
On what basis?
On the basis is that I did not supply enough basis, enough probable cause to believe that their information would help or would enable to the Department of Defense to find the documents that I'm looking for.
Wow.
In other words, I didn't say, well, I want to subpoena them because they know where the information is, or they have sources that know where the information is. Unfortunately, I don't know what any of the sources Dr. Greer has, so I can't.
Did you ever get a reaction from Dr. Greer? Did he ever email you or communicate with you with regard to your effort to get him subpoenaed?
No, not since I announced on your show that's what I was thinking of doing. I had contacted him on two occasions prior to resorting to the attempt to obtain a subpoena, and both times he was totally uncooperative.
Mm-hmm.
In all ways. And I even offered to help him so that he wouldn't even have to do anything. I would do all the work, and he was still just totally uncooperative.
Peter Davenport, on the other hand, was to some degree cooperative, because I asked him on the air and he said, look, I've already said if I'm subpoenaed, I will tell what I know.
Well, that's a catch-22, if only if he's subpoenaed, which means that under certain circumstances, he would come forward and tell us what I think is significant information. But unless he's subpoenaed, he's not going to come forward.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, there is a bit of a conundrum here in that he did make promises, personal, my-word kind of promises, to the people that he talked to. Under subpoena, the balance, I think, would be broken. But just tell me what you know. Break your promise. I'm not sure that one works.
Well, I can understand his position. The problem is he shouldn't have promised in the first place. I don't understand why he did. But since he did, then if the promise...
Well, now, wait a minute, Peter. Let's back up. Suppose somebody came to you, some pseudo-government source came to you and said, all right, Mr. Gerson, sit down, have a seat. We're going to tell you what's really going on here, but you are going to have to promise for at least the time being to keep it to yourself. And you have that choice. It was either, okay, I promise, or hell no, I can't keep it to myself. Go away, I don't want to know. Now, be honest with yourself and me, Peter. What would you say?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I'll tell you the truth. Number one, there is such a thing as an attorney's privilege. I've had that in relationships with clients. Everything clients tell me in the course
privilege.
Of my representation has
sure.
to be privileged. I
sure.
have to keep it secret,
sure.
confidential.
Right. I know, well, but if
the answer is no. The answer is no, Arthur. I would tell them, goodbye. I don't want to know the information because it would compromise me as to what I want to write and talk about. And I don't want to be compromised. What happens if I find out the same information through another source?
Oh, but Peter, I work a lot with attorneys, as you know, maybe more than I want to. And I know that attorneys will take information sometimes on background. And although they don't develop that information directly in court, they use it to develop information based on what they've been told, right? In other words, you get something from somebody under privilege, but you find another way to go to the source and get the information.
Okay,
yes?
So you're qualifying it now. You're saying that I can use the information.
Well, I'm saying you know you could.
Well, I don't. You see, the thing is, we're talking in a vacuum, and I don't really know what it is that I can use and not use. It depends on the agreement between the two parties. If the agreement is not to use the information in any way, shape, or form...
Yeah, but if you can go down another highway and develop the same information because you know what the destination is, then, you know, information is power, right?
Well, I would consider it. In other words, if the only thing I didn't have to do is reveal the actual information learned from these people, but any leads that I got or any other sources
right.
that I was on my own,
right.
yeah, I would consider that, definitely.
All right, good enough. Hold tight right there, and it may be for a while. We'll check with Peter Davenport and see if he has his act together with regard to what's just happened in our skies out west here. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to...
God, what a weird night. This is really weird, folks. We have had a major occurrence out west here. I don't know what's happened, but we're about to find out. Peter Davenport is about to be on the line with me. And I, of course, began receiving reports, which I read to you in the first hour, of something major in our skies, crossing west to east and seen in Oregon and California, and who knows where else, probably here in Nevada as well. I was on the air, or actually not on the air, but just prior to going on the air, so I missed it. And then our entire valley is now out of power. You are hearing me right now, courtesy of an 11.5-kilowatt generator operating on propane. And I just walked outside and looked to both sides of our valley. And it is utterly dark. All power in the Pahrump Valley is off everywhere. It's absolutely eerie out there. I mean, really eerie. You can see a few neighbors who have got candles flickering. But other than that close in, there's nothing out there, folks. It's deader than a doornail here, and we're on emergency power as I speak to you. So, Peter Gersten is my main guest. Peter Davenport is coming up in a moment because something's going on out there, something big.
Pornography on the internet is a serious...
Moon coming up. I'm telling you, it is a weird night. It's a blood-red moon coming up out there over a smoky valley. There's a lot of smoke and absolutely no light at all. All power in our valley is off. And something streaked across our western skies going west to east. Here at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, where I bet the phones have been going absolutely berserk, is Peter Davenport, so we can get it. Peter, welcome. Are you there, Peter? Oh, wait a minute. Push the button, dummy. All right, now you should be there, Peter.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you.
Yeah, you're correct, Art. Something has taken place. We're trying to put the pieces together here. I just walked through the door about an hour ago and was confronted by a full answering service stacked up with messages to the ceiling. I've gone through those messages very briefly. I have a few cuts here, but in brief summary, it appears that something has happened from as far north as Oregon in the vicinity of Eugene. The objects were seen. We're talking about multiple objects. It appears this is all based on preliminary data, of course, but it appears as though we're dealing with more than one group of objects. Apparently, a large group of objects, I'm estimating seven in number. They were visible to most observers on the ground long enough for them to be able to count the objects. Very large in size, went from approximately northwest to southeast, the full length of California.
Wow.
In addition to that, we have reports from Novato, California, just north of San Francisco, of course. People saw an object come in from the west and then split into three parts and proceed to the east. How many groups of objects we're dealing with at this point, we don't know, but it appears to me at this early stage that at least two distinct clusters of objects. We just got a call from NBC News in Chico, California. They confirmed that they've taken a number of reports there, and a very interesting report from Portland, Oregon. Some witnesses on the ground there report that what they think were military aircraft went at a blistering pace, headed south, probably on afterburner.
Chasing it.
Chasing whatever it is we're talking about.
All right, I began right away to get faxes, which I began reading on the air, Peter.
Yeah.
People are telling me they saw this for as long as 1 to 2 minutes going from horizon to horizon. They described it as floating across the horizon, not coming in any way as a meteor would come in.
That's consistent with everything we have received, too. I've taken approximately 15 reports in the last hour, Art, and they're still coming in.
And to verify that, I mean, people, you know, they're almost in shock. But here's a man in Redding, California, who had time to go out and actually invite his family to come out and see it occurring. Now,
yes.
Now, no matter what you think of eyewitness testimony, if he had that much time, I mean, that's just not possible.
That's certainly not crash dummies or swamp gas, that's for sure.
No, indeed not. So you've got some audio for us.
Yeah, let me play one short clip. I think it's about 40 seconds. This comes from a family in Chico, California. I think mother and four children were able to see the objects, and they counted them. Let's just go to the cut. Here we go.
It's Wednesday night at 9:30. Four and my boys and I were just outside and saw a group of glittery-tailed UFOs going from northwest to southeast across from horizon to horizon. They were visible for probably a minute and a half.
Listen.
There was a large group in the front and several following, one of which changed its course in order to get into a better line.
Wow.
I'd be glad to talk to you anytime.
Wow.
Was Chico, California. Apparently the objects were actually maneuvering in formation. This is not a proton booster breaking up, as far as I can tell, Art, or any kind of space junk. Let me go right to a cut.
She said one of the objects changed its course to get back into formation.
Yes. They were maneuvering, Art. This is very similar to what we heard November of 1997, November 14th, Friday night. You probably remember the incident in which the cluster of lights went across across Washington and British Columbia and Alberta.
I recall, yes.
That was the incident that caused the Air Force out of Cheyenne Mountain to declare that it was a Russian proton booster flying from east to west, interestingly, that plunked down in the Pacific. It's going to be very interesting to see what their statement is about this incident. My sense of it, based on now about 15 messages I've listened to, is that we're dealing with something major, and it is not meteor. And there's been some very complex maneuvering of these objects take place. And they've been seen by as far north as
Oregon,
Eugene, perhaps even Salem, Oregon, on I-5 by a trucker.
And these are early days yet with regard to reports.
Yes. And I should mention that our answering service is filled up.
I wonder, Peter, how far east it was seen. In other words, if people here in Nevada saw it.
Yeah. I haven't taken any reports from Nevada yet. I'm intrigued by the fact that your power is out there, Art, because they were headed right in your direction.
The entire valley's out. I have no idea what happened. But just prior to the hour, actually coming back, 10 seconds, literally, before I was due to come back from the news, all power went off in the valley, and we had to scramble and get the generator on, and we're still on emergency power. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got my internet is down at the moment. So.
So is mine, interestingly.
So if somebody could please email my webmaster, that would be Keith Rowland, webmaster@artbell.com. I would like to know how extensive the power failure is. I don't know, for example, whether they have power in Las Vegas or not. And I would like to know. I have no idea how extensive the outage is, whether it's related or not. But you go right ahead with more.
Let me go to another cut that comes in from Novato, California, again, just north of San Francisco. Comes in from a young woman who is driving with her husband. I think they were going east on Route 37, and this is what she describes that the two of them saw. Here we go, Novato, California.
Which was a series of three glowing trails slowly moving across the sky at a low altitude, and I watched one of them break off, and so these looked like they were heading south across the sky, maybe southeast, and I watched one break off from that configuration and go off into an easterly direction.
Huh.
And we pulled over on the side of the highway to see happening with that, and just as we pulled over, they actually just completely disappeared from view.
Just disappeared from view, apparently. So we have reports of objects approaching the main cluster with which they're flying. We now have a report of an object separating itself from the cluster of lights that it was flying with. We've had reports of clusters as large as 7 or perhaps 8 fairly large objects. That was the cluster that went down sort of the spine of California, headed to generally in the southeastern direction.
I have a question, Peter.
Yeah.
Would it be possible, and you probably haven't had time to do this yet, but if you had pretty good time hacks on when these objects were seen from Oregon and when they were seen in California, mm-hmm. you might be able to estimate the speed of the objects.
That's the interesting thing, Art. All the times are about the same. In other words, the time, and I'm going on memory now, but the time reported over Oregon was about 9:30 to 9:35.
That's what I'm getting
times,
to.
All the times over California, about the same.
Same time. I'm getting the same thing.
Yeah.
From Redding, California, from, let me see, where in Oregon? Southern Oregon, it says. Only Southern Oregon, so. Mm-hmm.
So they were up over Northern Oregon, again, in the vicinity of Salem, and certainly as far north as Eugene. And we're getting calls from law enforcement, 911 facilities. And again, I'm particularly intrigued by this allegation or assertion that military jets were going out of the Portland area, headed apparently south.
Who told you that?
It comes in from somebody in the news media, I believe. I have a telephone number, but I didn't get a name on that. It was just before I was going on the air with you.
So, in other words, whatever these things are, somebody considered them obviously to be some sort of threat to national security.
That would appear to be the case, or of interest to the military, ruling out the possibility that it's one of their own pieces of hardware. So it looks like a major event.
All right, since I'm, again, folks, please, since I am not able to access the internet at the moment, if you would be so kind as to, if you saw the objects, and or you have lost power, please contact Keith Rowland. That would be webmaster@artbell.com, and we'll try and get some of that information together as we move into the next hour. You've got more, Peter.
Yeah, I have a few more cuts here that are particularly interesting. The next one comes from a truck driver who was in just south of Mount Shasta in Northern California, in the vicinity of Dunsmuir, I think he said. This is his description of what he saw. It's somewhat different from the reports I've played so far. Here we go.
All right. Northern California, just south of Mount Shasta. At 9:30, I was looking up outside of my truck. I'm a driver. I saw a bunch of diagonal line of white dots with a long trail of golden, fiery color straight up in the sky heading north to south. It had a leader in front of it with the same tail behind it. I counted for 15 seconds before it got out of sight. It did not dissipate at all. The color was bright until it was out of sight. But my arm had a distance. It was about 3 inches between my thumb and forefinger.
3 inches between thumb and forefinger, that's probably about 6 to 8 diameters of a full moon. So the cluster was smeared out across the sky.
Ooh, that's big.
Yeah. It was a big formation of lights. And I have a cut here from, I think it's from Napa, that suggests that the witnesses there saw large objects and small objects, suggesting that perhaps the latter were at higher altitude by the time they'd gotten down to Napa. So let me go to that cut, if I may, Art, and let's hear what this gentleman has to say.
All right.
We're here in Napa, and we just saw a weird sighting. It was a single red light shooting across the sky at semi to rapid speed. It was lateral. It wasn't falling at all. And then immediately it shot into three different pieces, one shooting upward, one shooting straight, one shooting downward. It was about 10:30 California time, and if you'd like to contact me.
I think he meant 9:30.
Yeah.
But that is the only report we have of a single object breaking into multiple objects. Interestingly, this is very similar to a number of reports we received of that dramatic event on the 15th of August over New Mexico. We are still collecting very, very interesting data on what happened there, and we have a number of people who report, like one of the early witnesses whom we had on that first program, Jake from Aztec. You may recall he described how the object just sort of blew into a bunch of streaks of light. We just received another interesting report similar to his from Bosque, New Mexico, about 25 miles south of Albuquerque. So what is happening tonight has some parallels to what happened over New Mexico on the 15th of August. I have no idea what's going on tonight, Art, but...
Well, that was what I was about to ask you. Peter, is this report at all consistent with what a meteor could be? In other words, could a meteor or a group of meteors, or even space junk, remain for a minute or 2 minutes in sight?
I think it is possible, in theory, for space junk to do that. For example, when the space shuttle comes back, it's usually in the atmosphere burning bright, probably for 5, maybe as much as 10 minutes. However, the objects are reported to be maneuvering, and people see the sparks are coming off the tails of these objects, not off the noses. When an object comes back from space or comes in from space at high speed, it is the nose of the object, obviously, which heats up. Everybody is emphasizing that very beautiful trails of sparks are trailing off the trailing edge, the aft end of these objects. And again, the objects, according to many reports, are seen by the witnesses to be maneuvering in some kind of complex fashion. That's the interesting thing, Art.
And the first one you played, the lady who said she saw an object get out of formation and then move back into formation.
Yes. It was approaching the group, apparently trying to orient itself somewhat closer to the other objects. So it's going to be very difficult to force this one into the space junk box.
Okay. I would like to make another appeal, and that is to anybody in the military or anybody who had access to weather radar. Again, would you please send an email to my webmaster? That would be webmaster@artbell.com, and give us a contact phone number. These should have shown up on all kinds of radars, right?
It depends on their altitude. Usually, my understanding is most aviation FAA radars go up only to about 60,000 feet. If these were above that altitude, they would not have been seen on an FAA radar scope. Whether military goes higher than that or not, I don't know. But if anybody got videotape, we'd certainly like to see it. Or any other kind of objective evidence they may have gotten of these things.
And particularly any witnesses who saw military aircraft chasing them.
Yeah.
What did that person tell you? That
he called from Beaverton, Oregon, and he said that he lives under the major north-south route for commercial traffic. If you take off from Seattle and go south, you go essentially right over Beaverton. He said they're very familiar with traditional commercial traffic, and they can tell, they can distinguish between military and commercial. And the objects, the aircraft, rather, they heard tonight were distinctly military, they thought. And they were going to the south, so it appears that they may have been out of either the Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have Air National Guard. They may fly F-15s out of Portland. They also could have been out of Tacoma, McCord Air Force Base, which is not too far north of there. It wouldn't take them very long at all to get from Tacoma down to Portland.
Do you have any reports at all of any impact?
None so far. If anybody saw those objects close to the ground, obviously, we would like very much to hear from them. Or if anybody sees them stop in midair or stop close to the ground, we'd like to get reports from those individuals as well, obviously.
All right. As you know, I've got Peter Gersten on the line. And so I'm going to go away for, about 13 minutes, Peter. If you want to collect any more data during that time, go right ahead. I'm going to come back to you after the top of the hour break and then bring you on with Peter Gersten, if that would be all right.
Okay. That sounds fine.
All right. Then stay right where you are. Well, very, very strange occurrences here in the West tonight, folks. Something streaked across our skies, something big, something that had several portions, something that maneuvered. That's what we've got so far. We'll be right back from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. What a night. It is. Good morning, everybody. We are monitoring several stories going on here. Obviously, a large object or objects have re-entered the atmosphere. And I say re-entered because I'm beginning to get some reports that some news media is saying that it was a Russian booster rocket that the scientists thought would come down over the Pacific, but has re-entered early, unexpectedly, obviously causing a pretty big commotion. Now, whether or not that's an accurate story, I have no way of knowing. I also have a second story, both of these from Keith Rowland, who is able to receive email and relay it to me by telephone. We are in contact. That power went out in parts of northern Arizona at, get this, 9:30. The same time as the Russian booster, if that's what it was seen to be re-entering. Now, why chase planes would be going after a re-entering Russian booster, I don't know. And whether that is an accurate story or not, I don't know. But I report it to you as I have received it. Several people have said that various news organizations have reported that what we have seen is some sort of Russian booster that has re-entered. Back now to Peter Davenport at the UFO National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. Peter?
Yeah, I'm here, Art. That's a very interesting bit of information, and indeed in the final analysis, it may be an accurate report. I'm trying to get to a map of California to look at where places like Chico is relative to Novato. We heard that gentleman describe how an object came in from the west and split into three pieces. Also, one thing I wanted to add, Art, during the break I was going through some of my hastily scribbled notes here. The trucker up in Oregon actually was closer to Portland than he was to Eugene, and he reported that the objects he saw disappeared suddenly from his sight. Now, I don't know much about re-entering space junk, but it seems unusual to me that it would come into the atmosphere and then just disappear from sight.
Well, I was trying to put together the other comment. The lady who said that something went out of formation and then got back into formation, I suppose the aerodynamics of something re-entering could cause it to seem to veer to off course and then veer back again. I'm trying to put together in my mind how that could be.
Yeah. And also the amount of time that we're talking about, a couple of minutes or so, suggests to me that some fragments of this, if it is indeed space junk, fragments should reach, some of them should reach ground level. The other question I have is why the military, or rather the Space Command, didn't warn people.
Well, yeah, they said unexpectedly re-entered. They thought it would hit the Pacific 2 days from now. Now, these are very sketchy reports, Peter, and don't depend on them at all. I'm simply passing on to you what I'm getting from Keith,
yeah,
who's going through tons of email right now.
I'll bet.
Anyway, it's a kind of an interesting backdrop. By the way, we're well over an hour now here without power in the entire valley. I understand Las Vegas does have power, and I'm not sure about other directions from here. And again, northern Arizona lost power, interestingly, at about 9:30, Peter.
Mm-hmm. That's ironic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You know, you remember when the western half or western third of the U.S. lost power?
Yes, I do.
There were objects that night that went streaking across, as you may recall, and then, boom, the power went down.
Mm-hmm. I remember the night, actually.
Yeah.
Similar events back in, I think it was the 9th of December, 1965, the Great Eastern Blackout, of course, objects reported. But
now, should we believe reports on the radio that say it's some sort of Russian booster? I don't know. That's a mundane, interesting explanation, but I'm not sure I believe it any more than any of the rest of what I'm hearing. You know, it's early days here.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a map of California. Obviously, Novato is just north of the San Francisco Bridge. The one witness who's reported from there suggested that it was one object coming in from the west, and it split into three separate objects. Now, if that's the case, that is a far cry from an object coming down from northern Oregon, moving at a steady precession over northern California.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we're going to have to put all the pieces together. It's going to take days to analyze all the reports, and I don't want to say it can't be space junk, but based on the preliminary reports we've gotten, it does surprise me that if this is space junk. But time will tell, I guess. And again, if anybody saw objects close to the ground or heard anything, we would like to know that
as well.
All right.
I'm going to ask you, Peter, to hold on for a moment. I want to bring you on with Peter Gersten. It's very synchronistic that you should happen to be here. We'll do all of that in just a moment. 7. Only UFO lawyer that we're aware of in the cosmos is Peter Gersten, and he is with us now, or back with us now. Thank you for yielding some time, Peter, so that we could do this. Are you there?
Oh, no problem. This has been fascinating for me. Very synchronistic, as you say. You know, it's amazing. I'm just sitting here in amazement.
All right. What I would like to do is to bring on Peter Davenport for whatever comments he may still have, and for a bit of a discussion, because you were going to depose Peter Davenport, and let's find out why you were going to do that. Mr. Davenport.
I am here, Art.
Any more updates?
Nothing, just one more cut from Auburn, California, but essentially it's the same. One observation I make, Art, just very briefly here, is November 14th, 1997, when that alleged Russian booster re-entered over the Northwest.
Yes.
People reported that there were 7 large objects, principal objects. That is the same number that people are talking about tonight.
Mm.
Whether there's any significance to that or not, for example, there could be 7 major engines and fuel tanks that are the principal metallic objects in a proton booster, if that's what we're dealing with tonight. But I did note the similar number between the two incidents, again, November 97 and the incident tonight.
Well, when somebody tells me a Russian booster has reentered, and that's what we all just saw, we've got to take their word for it.
Yeah, I guess we have to consider that seriously. And time will tell, and after we've looked at the reports and the data, we'll know more. Everything we've said tonight is very preliminary. I would state that.
All right. To be out, power out an hour and 20 minutes where I am, the entire valley is highly unusual. The northern Arizona outage at 9:30 is also of some interest. At any rate, Peter, if you wouldn't mind, Peter Davenport, if you wouldn't mind, tell our audience why it is that Peter Gersten sought to have you subpoenaed, deposed, with regard to something that you know. Tell us as much as you're able to why he wanted to talk to you.
Well, I think it stems from a meeting I had with some people from the federal government. They contacted the National UFO Reporting Center in late April 1997. They were interested in some information we had that they had seen on our website. They requested a meeting. That meeting did take place on the 17th of May, 1997. Very interesting meeting. It was scheduled to have lasted for an hour, but it ended up going for 4 hours. So I presume they were very interested in what I had to say. They were deadly serious about wanting information. When we sat down, I guess principally as a courtesy to me, they said three things, Peter. Let us state our position with regard to the UFO phenomenon. Number one, we know that it is real. Number two, we know that these objects, or we suspect that they are controlled by some form of intelligence. And number three, we're worried about them. That was the beginning of a four-hour meeting. Was very interesting.
And these definitely were government guys.
Oh, yeah. They certainly worked for the U.S. government. I had assured myself of that long before the meeting took place.
Uh-huh.
Then, in June of 98, I revealed this on Coast to Coast, as you will recall. Peter Gersten, I gather, got wind of this from one of his subscribers to his website, I guess.
Well, he's got a very extensive newsletter that goes out by email every day, which is free, by the way, folks, and a new website up. We'll tell you about all that.
And Peter contacted me in June of this year to confirm that these facts were correct. I assured him they were. I sent him an email, and from that, he's expressed an interest in knowing who these people are in support of his case in federal court to press the government to come clean with the American people. So that, in a nutshell, is what is going on. Peter might have some amendments to what I've said.
All right. Peter Gersten.
No, that's basically true, but let me back up for a minute. First of all, Peter, I think you did a great job tonight, and I think you're doing a great job in general, and I think all of us, all the people on this planet have a great deal to be thankful for with you, the head of the UFO Reporting Center, and I know the sacrifice you're making. I know, you know, the financial difficulties that you have, and it's wonderful, and I'm in deep gratitude, and I pay tribute to you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Peter. You're right. People should understand that being a UFO investigator is a very, very hard work, oftentimes full-time work for very little compensation, in fact, no compensation.
A very strange job to have, period.
Yeah, it sometimes makes me wonder about me. Are 260 million Americans, and I end up with the hotline.
Yeah, and there you are.
Why me, Lord?
All right.
It's wonderful that you can be on the show tonight reporting to us, because other than that, where are we really going to hear the information as it's happening?
Yeah.
But with that said, the bottom line is causes against secrecy of any kind by anybody. And there's secrecy surrounding this meeting that Peter had. Now,
all right, Peter, what promises did you make?
Are you talking to me now?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Peter Davenport, I better still say that.
When we were approached by these people and they requested the meeting, one proviso they requested was that they did not want members of the press knocking on their door. And they said, Peter, we would like to meet, but can we do it in such a fashion that you do not reveal who we are? Well, I consented to that, Art. I explained to them that we do handle privileged information probably on a daily basis with regard to not revealing personal information about the people who contact us without their express permission.
Of course.
If we get their permission, of course, we give out name, telephone number, and so on, for example, for purposes of investigation. At Peter's request, I went back to these people and I explained to them that Peter Gersten had a case in federal court. He was very interested in talking to them or knowing who they were. And I did consent to Peter's request to try to get them to go public or to contact Peter. I've exchanged probably three or four emails with them, and they have declined to do that. Mm-hmm. They do not want publicity, and it's that simple.
So then, short of a subpoena, I know you've said if you were subpoenaed, you would come forward with the information, but short of that, you gave your word as a man, as an investigator, that you wouldn't reveal your source.
That's exactly the case, and I have to honor that. That's the way our operation runs. We can't do anything that would make people believe that the information they impart to us would find its way into the public forum.
Peter Gersten, what do you say to that?
Well, what can I say to that? I brought a lawsuit against the Department of Defense involving these large flying triangles, and the government, the Department of Defense, replied that they have no information on this object. And now Peter sits down and has coffee with some federal employees, possibly from the Department of Defense, who tells him three things: that number one, UFOs are real; number two, that they're under intelligence, some kind of intelligent control, which would mean not our control. That's the implication I get. And number three, that their agency is worried about this. And I just have to sit with my hands tied behind my back, because Peter made a promise to these two, and the promise had to do with publicity. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to get publicity, that I would put them in any kind of jeopardy or compromise their positions. I want to talk to them. That's what I want to do. If they tell me they don't have any information concerning my particular lawsuit, goodbye. If they can tell me...
But obviously they do. I mean, with what you just laid out for me...
Well, if they tell me that I can't reveal any of the information, but then what we talked about earlier in the program, possibly I can go indirectly and maybe speak to somebody else who can give me information, you know. So
all right, Peter Davenport, are they willing, do you think, to talk off the record as long as they're assured it's not going directly to the press or going to get to the press or anything else? In other words, to pass on the information to... Peter Gersten, that he could follow through other avenues, not specifically the information they provide.
Yes. I requested that they do that. I specifically requested that they contact Peter Gersten, gave them his address and phone number in Scottsdale, the new one.
And they're even declining that.
They, after some consideration of that, declined that. I suspect, however, that they would prefer to do that rather than have it broadcast in public. But I'm only conjecturing there.
Well, that's not the threat, because we can't make that threat, because Peter Gersten has been unable to get a subpoena. Both of you, hold on for a moment. We'll take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Continuing to operate on emergency power from Pahrump, Nevada, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Was it a Russian booster re-entering? Peter Gersten. Peter?
I'm here.
All right. And Peter Davenport?
I'm here too, Art.
Any updates, Peter?
No, nothing new. I haven't had a chance to check our messages while I'm on this line.
All right. Why don't I allow you now to get off the line and go ahead and see if you can collect some more information for us and get us another report before we're off the air tonight.
Okay.
All right.
I'll touch base with you again in about a half an hour.
Mr. Davenport, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and good night, Peter.
Good night.
All right, that's Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. And now, once again, here is Peter Gersten. Well, Peter, man, what a night.
Quite a night, my friend.
Now I've got computers going down left and right here, so
I have a point of contention with you, my friend.
Sure, fire away.
Maybe I misunderstood what you said, but several moments ago you said that in reference to the rocket booster, you said we, quote, we have to take their word for it, unquote.
Well, I said we really have no choice. In other words, that's all they're saying. If that's what they're officially saying, then we either have to take their word for it or believe they're lying to us, right?
Well, we have reason to believe they're lying to us, don't we? Do you believe the Department of Defense has no idea, no information what these flying triangles are?
No, I don't believe that.
No, and you saw it. Do you think what you saw the Department of Defense does not have information on, whether it's ours, whether it's somebody else's, whether it's something else's? So they're lying. In other words, the presumption now is that we don't believe what they tell us. And we know for a fact, besides the DOD lawsuit, we know whenever there's a major event, there's cover stories. Mm-hmm. It started way back with swamp gas. It goes flares, right? Flares.
Oh, yes.
And planes. And for every, almost every sighting, a major sighting, there's an explanation. It has to be a cover story, if only to give to the media, so that the people who don't want to be alarmed will accept this explanation and go on their own way, 9 to 5, weekdays, weekends. And they won't be bothered, because the implication of what is going on in this reality is very alarming.
Well, it sure is. It sure is. This whole thing is alarming to me, Peter, what we're going through right now, and how you're going to break through that barrier. Describe the lawsuit that you filed, where you filed it, and so forth.
Okay, but one other point about what we talked about with Peter Davenport. What's frustrating, and what to a certain extent is ludicrous, is we have two federal employees who contact him and discuss whatever it is they discuss, telling him certain facts about the UFO phenomena. They then tell him that they do not want him to reveal their identity or what affiliation. But they can talk about what they are telling him. In other words, he comes on national radio in your show, and he tells everything about it, right? The conversation.
Yeah.
But then they don't want to go any further. It's like a tease. How can we verify the information? Even witnesses in the grand jury, well, not in the grand jury, on trial, of course, examine us to their credibility. Number one, how do we know they're telling us the truth? How do we know where they know their information from? And if, in fact, they're concerned, their agency's concerned, and it is truthful, then cause is concerned, and that's the basis of this lawsuit. We're concerned, but it's based on the evidence. There's evidence of contact. There's evidence that an aspect of this contact is threatening. And it's the same type of evidence
that
we see in court.
When you lay out your case, that not only is there evidence of contact, but that contact is threatening, how do you endeavor to establish that?
Well, in two forms it takes, the threatening aspect. The first, and it's interesting because in this type of lawsuit under Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, there's only been one interpretation, one prior case, and that was where Arizona sued the United States under Article 4, Section 4. And they wanted to be protected against the illegal aliens that were coming in from Mexico. Isn't that synchronistic? And the court, in looking over that section of the Constitution, said basically it applied only in cases of an armed hostility.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, if we can back up a couple of more points, the reason that I brought this lawsuit indirectly has to do with Dick Hoagland. Dick Hoagland, I think last year sometime, had a discussion with me about bringing a lawsuit against NASA because of certain practices that NASA, certain rituals that they were involved in.
Yes. Yes.
And I thought about it, and I did a little research, and I spoke to him again. I told him I couldn't find any legal basis, where the government or NASA would be responsible unless we could show some kind of, like, if a person was fired, if a NASA employee was fired because he wouldn't go along with these rituals. then we can bring a lawsuit.
In other words, you would need a specific incidence of some sort.
Yes, some cause of action, some direct connection between NASA or the federal government and you know, Richard, or you needed a plaintiff in the action. So he said, oh, Peter, you're just not thinking creatively. You should think, you broaden your horizons. Come up with some novel approach. Well, I thought about it, but I couldn't come up with any.
Mm.
A little while later, I was getting these reports, and as you said, we send out newsletters every day, and in response to the newsletters, we get back personal contact experiences.
Right.
And people were sending in experiences about what, if committed by humans, conduct if committed by humans, would be prosecuted. People would be arrested and prosecuted and, you know, put on trial and then sentenced to incarceration if convicted. The same type of conduct, abductions, sexual abuse, unlawful imprisonments, assaults, but for the fact that the perpetrators were described as non-human. That's the only difference between, you know, a report that you give to the police that winds up, you know, on trial, or this type of report. The only difference was in the description of the perpetrator. Now, of course, there were other differences, such as the act itself had a little high strangeness and so forth and so on. But basically, they kept on coming in. And we used to hear about these reports, you know, since Betty and Barney Hill's report.
Sure.
And they haven't gone away. And it's generational. And it seems to transcend time, even. It was, so how long do we have to ignore this? And so after receiving these reports, I just decided, well, let me see if somehow I could bring a class action on behalf of all the abductees, and we'll sue the federal government, all right? But I couldn't think of any basis of the federal government being responsible, even if aliens were abducting people. And a class action...
all right, here's the part that I'm not comfortable with. I mean, let's go back to what's happened tonight. Maybe a Russian booster reentered. Maybe not. Who the hell knows? That's what we're saying. Some media is beginning to say that it was a Russian booster. I said, what choice do we have but to believe them? And I stand by that in a way. In other words, it might not be that, or it might be that, but we only have one source of information. And if that one source of information doesn't want to cough up the truth... how do we force them to do it, Peter? I don't think we can do it in court. I don't see how. You have to explain to me how this process really is going to break through a barrier they don't want broken.
Well, by getting public attention, by getting the citizens of this country to stand up for their rights and the right to be told the truth and a right not to be lied to. And we have the resources. We have the technology. We don't have to depend on anybody else. But unfortunately, the resources aren't directed in the right avenues, it doesn't say. We could collect so much evidence now.
All right, you're coming at this very broadly. Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution that requires the federal government to protect each and every one of the 50 states against invasion.
Right.
Now, you have to establish, I guess... to move forward, that we are in fact being invaded.
That's the easiest part of it. The most difficult part is staying around to prove that, because basically, I'm not even sure cause has standing. Because you have to remember that the Constitution gives the federal government actually gives the states the right to ask for federal intervention. Nowhere does it say that the people have the right. So if the governor of say, Arizona doesn't ask for that,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that the people can then go in. It's possible that the only remedy might be to elect another governor who promises to do that. It might be a political question and not a judicial question. So the problem is whether cause has standing to be in court in the first place. See, that's the problem.
What's your best guess? How they would rule?
Well, they're going to try to knock it out because of that. And the only thing I can do is cite a similar type of right with shareholders in a corporation. In other words, the corporation being the state and the shareholders being the citizens. Now, if the board of directors, in other words, the governor, refuses to take action where action is due, the shareholders of the corporation have a right called a derivative right that allows them to bring the action in the name of the corporation. So I'm just going to cite that law, and hopefully it gets the judge to say, okay.
Is that a legal long shot? Or?
Oh yeah, definitely. The whole lawsuit is a legal long shot. I took Dick's advice, and I thought creatively, and basically, I took a risk because I could be probably criticized for bringing this type of case in court. But I'd rather, take a risk than not do anything. And I'd rather
be wrong. Could they come back after you with Rule 11?
Which is what, sanctions?
In other words, frivolous.
Oh, yeah, of course. But then again, I'm almost hoping they do that, because if they do that, then I can appeal that decision, and maybe then I can show it's not frivolous because I can show there's an evasion. You see, the point is, if there's an evasion, then it's not frivolous. But I might not be able to get to argue that unless they cite me and dismiss it because it's frivolous and fine.
Well, if you were right now required to show that there, in fact, is an invasion and therefore your lawsuit is not frivolous, if they began to require that, what would be your proffering? What would you offer?
Well, the main cases, I would think, is the evidence surrounding the crash that occurred in 1947 in Paradise Valley, Arizona. You got Travis Walton's abduction. You have the Phoenix Lights, and you have the various other sightings in Arizona. Now, of course, within that, you have the two aspects. Number one, it's the abduction. Number two, it's these unusual objects that are being seen in the skies almost on a monthly basis in Arizona. A couple of weeks ago, they saw the triangles again. Arizona is a very interesting state as far as sightings are concerned. So I can show that there are strange, unusual, what appear to be advanced technologically advanced objects flying in the skies that haven't been identified, the triangles. We have orbs coming into people's bedrooms and being scanned. We have, abductee reports, very unusual instances of contact in different forms.
Do you believe that eyewitness testimony, first-person testimony, would be sufficient to prove the case? In other words, without physical hard evidence.
Well, there's two aspects. Number one, I have to make out a prima facie case so it isn't dismissed as a matter of law, but I don't think that's a problem. It's a question for the jury, like anything else. Credibility is a question for the jury. If they believe the witnesses, then they believe the witnesses. But that's just not eyewitness testimony. You have expert testimony. You have some leading UFO researchers in this field that would be qualified as an expert in a federal court, whether it's Dave Jacobs, whether it's Bud Hopkins. I'm just naming a few without
sure.
going into their testimony, whether it's John Mack, whether it's some of the people, some of the support groups, the people that put together and sponsor and lead the support, abductee support groups, would, based on their practical experience, be able to come in and testify as an expert.
Suppose I were to tell you that I know from private knowledge that a couple of extremely high-level, senatorial-level representatives are aware of the situation and find it politically impossible to come forward.
Well, of course. There's such a cloak of secrecy surrounding this. I filed this lawsuit today. Steve Bassett, Larry Bryant, some of the cause members that are actually directly working with me, we all sent out press releases. Matter of fact, I paid $250 today to an internet group to send out press releases just to make sure we covered all the bases. Between Bassett and Bryant and myself, and I even asked cause members who can download the press release on the website to send it to their local radio and TV stations and newspapers, all right? So we sent out thousands and thousands of notices. There's even an AP and UPI reporter that's assigned to the federal court.
All right.
One radio station.
We'll come back to all of this, but there's a couple of things I really, really want to get on the air tonight. One is your new website,
Cool. Which
we have linked from my website, of course. But it's a major new website just put together with the help of the genius of websites, and that's Keith Rowland, my webmaster. And he's put a website together for you. What do you think of it, Peter?
What do I think of it? I'm amazed. I'll tell you, it's been a really bad day except for Keith. Keith is a wizard.
I know.
A web wizard. He is unbelievable.
I know. I know. He is the best, actually. And so it's all together. And what is the website address?
It's www.caus.org. And if you want to see a website that has information on it, pages and pages of information on it, whether it's personal contact experiences, whether it's the court cases, whether it's crop circles, whether it's UFO sightings, whether it's paranormal news network, or whether it's The Ultimate Secret or Non-UFO Sunday, you got to go to this website.
It's all on that website as of tonight, right?
Yep. Take you at least 6 months to read everything. It's all there. Thanks to Keith.
All right. Wonderful. Now, number two, you have a cause email newsletter, I guess, sort of a letter that comes out on a daily basis. And by the way, some idiot unsubscribed me again, so do me a favor and subscribe me once again, please, and put a pick lock on it so no fool can unsubscribe me, because that's what they're doing.
Probably and Keith can do that. Keith is probably listening now, so you're already subscribed.
All right. Somehow, he can do it. You're right. Keith can do that. For everybody else who would like to receive, it's free, folks, free, and it comes to you once every day with all the latest of what's going on from Peter Gersten, and they can go to your website and sign up for that. Isn't that correct?
That is definitely correct, and we changed the newsletter around a little bit because now we stress the website. What the newsletter does, gives you the highlights of what's on the website, so you even get in your mailbox information about subjects that either you like or don't like. So you can go to the website and read just what you want.
Gotcha. So everybody should go to that website first and sign up for the daily headlines. We'll be right back. That Northern Arizona suffered a power outage at about the same time I did, as well as at about 9:30, when these objects were seen. Some media sources are reporting these objects as re-entering Russian booster parts that they thought would re-enter over the Pacific a couple of days from now, but surprise, surprise. And just one little note, you may recall hearing recently that the Mir space station was abandoned, and they say they think they will bring that down over the Pacific when the time comes. But if you buy the Russian space parts business, then think about this. If they thought these parts would come down in the Pacific, and they didn't, then why aren't we how should we believe that Mir will come down over the Pacific and not over land? In other words, if they can be wrong about this, they can be wrong about that. Or would it be some kind of controlled reentry? But as far as I know, they have simply abandoned Mir without ability to control its reentry. I could be wrong about that. There's more news about the object tonight. Once again, from Seattle, Washington, here's Peter Davenport. Peter.
Yeah, Art, the parts are beginning to fall into place here, and we've had three quick reports that strongly militate against the Russian booster theory. Just in rapid sequence, we took a call from the vicinity of Elsinore, Utah. A man and his wife were returning from a bow and arrow hunting session, and they had a group of lights come at them from the north, and they were acting very strangely. One went over a ridge. They saw an immense flash, and the thing hit. Now,
where was this, please?
This was in the vicinity of Elsinore, Utah. They said that it was about 2 hours north of Las Vegas, Nevada.
So they've got impact.
Yeah. Now, I have about a minute cut of this gentleman reporting this. However, about 10 to 12 minutes ago, they were out smoking, and one of the objects came over and did a U-turn and went streaking off.
What?
I don't think we're talking about re-entering Russian booster.
All right, let's hear it.
Let me play the cut.
Yes, please.
We're coming back from the deer hunt to the archery hunt season. Her brother's hunting, and we was coming back home, and we thought it was a truck behind us because we was going up over a hill. Mm-hmm. And we thought a truck was behind us, and I turned to look behind, and there's just lights, you know, coming in a certain direction. But it was just like so many lights you couldn't even see.
Where was?
And you're in Utah?
I'm in Utah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And what direction were the lights coming from?
Which way were they coming from? We was going... I couldn't tell you because the roads turn and...
Okay.
You know, we couldn't...
Yeah.
We couldn't tell.
So what did the lights do and how did they act
well,
when you saw them?
When we were driving down the road, there was this little ravine that just drops down like a big drop-off. And we just seen all these lights, just, it was just a big glow. And then finally when they started to break up, you could tell that there were single lights. You could tell that there was just like more than one light. It wasn't just one big light. And two, I don't know if there was two or three, we couldn't tell from the glare of my windshield, just went to the west, like over our truck.
Uh-huh.
And went down a hill, and then one just shot and did like a U-turn type thing over the hill.
A U-turn.
And then we heard a big bang or a big hit or just like a sonic boom type thing hit the mountain up here.
It did a U-turn.
A U-turn, and then an impact.
And it was going to the west.
God, I wonder what's going on. That's no Russian booster.
Now, it's getting... I have a couple more, even more interesting reports.
Really?
We just took a report from a young woman in the Portland area who reported that at 9:30, she and her neighbors heard jet aircraft circling the area and landing at, Portland International Airport. They saw F-15s flying at slow speed that apparently landed there.
Really?
Now, in addition to that, we just took a report not 10 minutes ago from a gentleman who lives in the vicinity of Portland, Oregon, and they were monitoring military frequencies with their scanners, he reports.
Uh-huh.
And he said that as late as midnight tonight, they were launching aircraft out of that area, and they were trying to get aircraft, he reported to me, launched out of Kingsley Field.
Really?
Don't know where that is.
Kingsley Field. Somebody will tell us. All right. You have another cut. Go right ahead.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay.
It was two low-flying F-15s going very slowly. We assumed they were heading back to the Portland Airport. And
so you are sure you saw F-15s or heard F-15s tonight over Portland?
Yes. It brought me and my across-the-street neighbor to the door to see what was going on. We've never seen them that low.
Okay.
So F-15s over Portland tonight at about 9:30 or afterwards. And again, just to reiterate, Art, we have an unconfirmed report that the military was attempting to launch F-15s as late as midnight tonight. Now, 2.5 hours for
that's
a Russian...
Pacific, that's Pacific time?
That is Pacific time.
So 9:30, the main event occurred, and as late as midnight, they were trying to get F-15s off the... What the
off
hell?
Off the ground, and as recently as 20 minutes ago, this couple in Elsinore, Utah, saw objects go streaking over their heads. So this clearly, if we can believe these reports,
yes.
Of course, eyewitness reports are not terribly reliable, but my impression is we're dealing with very reliable people, more or less reliable people from what I can tell, and they're reporting that the incident apparently is continuing some roughly 3.5 hours after it began.
Oh, that makes no sense at all.
So your power outages there may not be an accident. I don't know what's going on, but the pieces begin to fall into place here. And if the incident was continuing as recently as 20 minutes ago, this is not a Russian booster reentering.
All right. Peter, as always, listen, you may not be done for the night.
Yeah.
So, are you all done now?
Oh, no. I'm going to be up until...
I understand. I mean, are you done with respect to the cuts you wanted to play for us?
Oh, yes, I am.
All right. Then I'm going to release you back to the world of taking reports. And if you can get back to me before 2 a.m., you know the private number.
I do indeed.
I'll be here.
And I encourage anybody who's up in the western United States to go outside and see what they can see.
All right. All right, Peter, thank you. So something obviously ongoing, ladies and gentlemen. That was Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. Quite a night for you to be with us, huh, Peter?
Definitely. And it's definitely cause for concern. It's a major event that should be investigated thoroughly. But you know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be explained away as a Russian booster, and that's going to be it.
How are they going to explain U-turns?
Well, they can't explain it. They don't try to explain it. All they need is a cover story. Cover story, Russian boosters.
Uh-huh.
People that don't believe in UFOs will believe Russian boosters, and the people that are familiar with what's going on in the skies will know that it's something other than a Russian booster.
and everybody go back to work 9 o'clock in the morning, come home 5 o'clock in the morning.
An explosion impact. Wouldn't we expect to see some military teams out? And even at this hour, they've still got jets up. Now, that doesn't make sense. If they have positively identified this as a Russian booster reentering, they're sure not going to waste the fuel having F-15s up even right now.
It's a cover story. It's very easy to prove whether, in fact, they expected a Russian booster to be coming down. There must be a record of that. So that can be checked into to see if something came down 2 days early, or at least, you know, could have come down 2 days early.
All right, Peter, hold it where you are. And what I'm going to ask is, I'm going to take a quick break here. If any of you are eyewitnesses to what occurred tonight, would you please call me? Would everybody else please hang up? If you were an eyewitness to what occurred tonight, or what may even still be going on at this hour, then I would like you to call me. But would everybody else please hang up and stop trying to call? So we'll take information with respect only to this incident and any calls you might have for Peter as well. Interesting night, huh, folks? How would you like to look and feel? Job has been many things, but never boring. Now we're beginning to get some reports that would seem to dispute the possibility that it was a Russian rocket reentering. We have with us Peter Gersten, who's trying to fight his way through to the truth legally. And you can join in that battle, folks, by going up to my website right now and go over to the Cause website and do two things. One, observe the incredible work of my webmaster, Keith Rowland, who's put all of this together for you and for Peter Gersten. It's big debut is tonight. You can sign up for the daily newsletter as well, which will tell you roughly what's going to be on that site at any given time or on any given day. Let me bring Peter back. Peter, are you there?
I'm still here, Art. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah. Interesting night. Let's take a couple of reports just for grins and see what we have out there. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Where are you, please?
This is Chad in Portland, Oregon.
Chad in Portland. All right. What did you see, if anything?
Actually, I didn't see the incident itself, but I worked 300 feet from the end of the runway, and they've been launching F-15s like crazy out here.
Really?
Yeah, I started work at about 9:30 tonight, and at 9:20, I was on my way to work, and I stopped right at the end of the runway and just watched about 11 of them coming in.
11?
Yeah, and they've been launching and landing all night.
Now, isn't that interesting? You say that was about 9:20?
Yeah.
Whatever it was that came in at 9:30, I think we have reasonably established. That sounds like they might have known ahead of time what was about to happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but I work at the post office, and we're right at the end of the runway, so...
Okay, and you normally would not get this kind of traffic at this time of the morning,
right? No. Normally they do morning-type runs at about 6 o'clock in the morning.
I appreciate your report. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care. Military traffic. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Peter Gersten and Art Bell.
Yeah, this is Dan in Idaho Falls.
Yes, sir. Idaho Falls, Idaho.
I represent the Galactic Federation, and they put on a show tonight in the sky just to enhance this call.
You think so?
I have a message to tell the world.
Well, then tell it quick.
The King of Terror arrived on July 5th. Jupiter and Saturn ignited and became stars.
They did not.
You can verify that by looking in your sky.
All right.
You've got the redshift program.
All right. Well, you don't need you don't need redshift to verify that those planets became stars. Thank you very much. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Gersten and Art Bell, who are not members of the Galactic Federation. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello?
I'm calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, ma'am.
My son's a truck driver who just got in tonight, and he called his dad between 11:30. And said he thought he saw a UFO. He said it was a string of lights. At first, he just kind of thought it was a military formation and wasn't paying any attention to it, and it was doing something else. And he looked back and saw they were still there. It was moving very slowly. And when they seemed to get closer, he could tell it was separate lights. So that was in Tucson, and he called here between 11:30 tonight. And said
so
just before then.
It was seen in Arizona, then.
That's what my son said.
Okay.
He didn't even know your show was on.
I hear you. And I appreciate your call. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
All right. There you are, Peter. So You know, right now, when you consider everything that we've heard, what the press is saying, what Peter Davenport is saying, and what my witnesses are saying, like the fellow who has listened to these F-15s screaming over his head, it could go either way, couldn't it? It could be... Actually, from what I've heard so far in my mind, but maybe that's because of me, I tend more toward believing that we're being told a load of you-know-what here.
Well, that seems obvious. And a witness on the stand, if the witness is caught lying, the judge will instruct the jury when it gives its instructions on the law that if they believe that the witness lied on the stand,
yes,
they can disregard the witness's entire testimony. Even if they don't know whether he lied about the entire testimony, if they find he lied about one particular thing.
So, in other words, in any sort of trial, that generally would be true. If a witness is a proven liar on the stand, then their entire testimony can be disregarded.
That's true.
Does not have to be, but can be. Is that correct?
Exactly. Exactly. So, basically, we have evidence that the powers and authority have lied to us before on many occasions. So there is no reason for us to believe they're telling us the truth when they tell us it's a rocket booster, especially when there's evidence to the contrary. And we have eyewitness testimony to the contrary. We have from different people in different parts of the country, whether it's U-turns, whether it's maneuverability, whether it's leaving the main group and doing something else, whether it's, you know, floating. The evidence is overwhelming. It's a major event that we're listening to that's taking place now over how many, 3, 4, 5 states?
Yes.
Over a 3-hour period of
at
time
least.
Involving the scrambling of military jets, possible power blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major event. This should be on the front pages of every single newspaper tomorrow.
I wonder if it will be. Somehow, I doubt it.
I doubt it too, my
Peter.
Friend.
Somehow, I doubt it, but... I bet there will be some coverage. There has to be some coverage of all of this.
I would think so. This is bigger than the Phoenix Lights.
Well, I don't know if it's bigger, but it's as big as so far, and we've really only just begun. You know, when you have this kind of event, the stories you hear in the beginning are usually not all that trustworthy, but, you know, all these witness reports have been pretty consistent with regard to direction. They've been differing a little bit in the behavior of the objects, but that may be dependent on where you were when they did what they did. Somehow we've got to figure a way, and you're the only guy I know of trying,
well,
to pry this information from their hands.
You know what's interesting also, you say that the early reports might not be reliable. Basically, you know what hearsay is? You can't go into court and testify to what you heard somebody else say.
Yes.
There are certain exceptions. One of the exceptions is the spontaneous declaration. And basically, if you hear somebody say something that's close to the act they're reporting, then that seems to be more reliable than later on. In other words, it's more spontaneous. They're telling you what they just experienced rather than weeks later when their memories fade. So I would think the initial reports, to a certain extent, are reliable, possibly more reliable than a couple reports a week or two after the event.
Here's something for you to think about, because I'm thinking about it. If I had not been prepared with significant emergency power backup, the event that just occurred would not have been reported on my show because there wouldn't have been a show.
It's amazing how the universe works. I think that this event is intentional. Whatever these objects are, whatever this intelligence is very deliberate in what it does, usually at night, and they put on a show tonight. This is a show for us, for the listeners that are listening. This is a message.
Listen, a lot of people that I talk to, Peter, well, highly placed people, are telling me the same thing, that whoever they are and whatever they are, what they have been doing is demonstrating to us. And that's just about what you just said.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. They're in control.
Huh. All right. Hold tight. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. And again, let me restrict the lines out there.
You look like an angel.
To people who saw something, if we could,
walk
please.
Walk like an angel.
Once again, Peter Davenport.
AmericanMusic.com is online.
Not quite.
And influence the music you hear on the radio.
Absolutely. Jupiterfest.com. Actually, that sounds pretty interesting, and so does what Peter Davenport has to say. I was so much in a hurry to get on the air, I didn't even see RateTheMusic.com coming. I'm telling you, folks, it's getting weirder by the minute. Peter Davenport, once again. Peter?
Yeah. We've had a number of very interesting reports. Are just in very rapid sequence, a commercial pilot over Northern California flying out of Beale Air Force Base, he was at about 16,000 feet doing about 200 knots, and the objects were directly in front of him. He turned his lights down. They went over him. He actually turned his aircraft to pursue them. He reports that as they were going away from him, they were much more difficult to see. I have no explanation for that.
Now, let's backtrack a little bit. This is an important report. You've got a report from a pilot, a commercial airliner pilot, I take it.
He's a commercial pilot. I think he was in a private aircraft, single engine.
And he was at 16,000 feet?
Yeah, and they went right in front of his aircraft.
Okay, isn't that generally pretty high for a private aircraft?
Oh, not really. Not for some of the high-performance ones.
That's true.
It's probably a pressurized aircraft.
I'm sorry. They said he said they were roughly at his altitude?
No, they were above his altitude. He was at 16,000. How high above him, he doesn't know. But we also have a very interesting report from a gentleman in Everett, Washington, just north of Seattle.
Yes.
He is a ham operator, and...
Peter, I'm going to give you a second to put on your call.
I'll come right back to you.
All right, go ahead. He's got obvious calls coming in there by the gazillion, so he's going to try to make an adjustment and come back to us so that will not interrupt the reports. Obviously, thousands of people at once are trying to get through. And I think that what he's done is probably...
I'm sorry, Art. If you can hold just a second, I'll come right back.
All right, go ahead. He's got to hit a couple
of keys. It's madness here tonight. Everybody's trying to get in touch with me all at once. Also, a ham radio operator reports a very peculiar signal at 14.290 megahertz heard in Everett, Washington, with a strange pinging sound on it.
14.290?
14.290 megahertz.
That's in a ham band.
He said he's never heard it before. I have no idea the validity of this report. A third interesting report comes from a gentleman who lives off the end of Kingsley Field. Apparently that is a field. I'm not familiar with it.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Okay, that's 14290 I'm listening to right now. And it's essentially quiet.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to let you know. All right, go ahead.
A gentleman who lives very close to Kingsley Field said that he has heard no activity out of there tonight. Also, I just received a call from Gerald Rowles, the state director for MUFON in the state of Washington. He contacted some of his military friends in eastern Washington. Apparently, no activity there. However, I have an audio cut here that I'd like to play. This comes from a young girl in Richfield, Utah, if I have this tape properly cued. She saw a distinct ball of light come across the mountain, viewed from her vantage point in Richfield. It stopped. Visibly stopped for an estimated 2 to 3 seconds and then blew into four parts, which went streaking off across the horizon, according to her.
It stopped?
It stopped.
And this was at about what time, please?
I don't know the time, Art. Information's coming in here pretty quickly.
I understand. Go ahead.
Here we go.
The fast jets.
Oh, this is a gentleman in Utah who's reporting jet activity near Elsinore, Utah. This is 10 minutes ago.
Go ahead.
And you can tell that they're jets and they have little flashing lights on them. There's about three or four of them in the area that we was in. They're just like all over the air.
Okay. They're all over the air near Elsinore, Utah, he reports.
All right.
So I believe, if we can believe these preliminary reports, that we're dealing with something other than just a simple reentry of space junk. There are too many reports of objects stopping, turning, doing U-turns, and so on.
Do you have the young lady's tape?
I don't believe I do. I've lost that in the queue.
I understand. It's an utter madhouse.
Yeah.
Utter madhouse, I can imagine.
I've got a stack of papers and tapes here, and it's just piling up on me.
All right, Peter.
All right.
Bless your heart.
Thank you. I thought you'd like to know, and if anything major happens, I'll get back in touch.
All right, thank you. That's Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. Peter Gersten is still with us, sort of along for the ride tonight. He was here to debut his website, which is incredible, and I might add, timely, considering what's going on right now. And he's still with us. Thanks for your forbearance, Peter.
No problem, my friend. This is great. This almost sounds like the Orson Welles broadcast.
Yeah, it is a little like that, isn't it? All right. A first-time caller line. You're on the air with Art Bell and Peter Gersten. Where are you?
Art Bell, son?
Yes, this is Art Bell.
Art Bell, son. This is Sally. I'm calling from Sonoma.
Hi, Sally.
I don't know what's more exciting, that I'm getting to talk to you or what I saw tonight for the first time in my life. I'm still shaking.
Well, tell us what you saw.
All right. I went to visit my girlfriend who lives in Marinwood. That's North Marin County, about approximately 20 to 30 miles north of San Francisco.
Yes.
And she has a beautiful house on the side of a hill, and we went out on the back deck because I'm an amateur astronomer, and I spend most of my evenings looking up at the sky and listening to you. And I looked off to the north. Something caught my eye, and it was moving in an easterly direction.
Easter.
And I said, Jerry, look, what is that? And what we both saw were three objects. I had to just really concentrate. I thought, is some light moving on a cloud? But it was three formations moving to the east, perfectly in unison. It wasn't anything with blinking lights or flashing, just three. All I can describe it is like the shape of a tadpole, kind of round but with a long tail.
Right.
Like a comet tail behind it.
Right, I've got you.
And there was one in the lead and two behind it, but just what struck us was how perfectly in unison they were moving.
Yes, and how long were you able to see them?
We replayed it back. We, you know, kind of had the mini recreation, and we counted out. I saw it for 7 seconds, and she caught it for about the last five.
I see.
And it just disappeared. And we stood out there in shock, thinking, oh, we can't believe this. What's happening? And
was that about 9:30?
It was 9:30 because I got to her house at 9, and we chit-chat for a while and ate some Snickers, and then we went out because I said, God, this is such a beautiful night. And she turned out all the lights in this enormous house she has and all the outside lights so it would get really dark. And then she told me what she saw, and it was exactly what I saw.
All right. I really appreciate your call.
And I just want to say one more thing. When I was driving home, I was listening to you, and if I wasn't mistaken, I heard somebody call from Novato.
Yes.
Reporting something, and that's probably just a mile from where she lives.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay?
Thank you very much, Sally.
Oyasumina sai. Good night, Art.
Sayonara. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Peter Gersten and Art Bell.
Hello, Art.
Yes, hi.
What I saw... I just come out of a movie, so I was in the parking lot of the movie theater.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Redding, California.
Right.
And look up in the sky, and in the western sky, we saw three objects. One larger one in front, two smaller in behind, and they crossed all the way across the sky until we couldn't see it in the eastern sky. My friend who was standing beside me said he saw a part break off of the lead object. I did not see that, however, as there were many lights in the parking lot.
So how bright was it?
Well, it's very smoky where I am because there's many fires just
yep.
like
just right here. Yep.
And but it was pretty bright. It was orange in color.
How long were you able to see it?
To give you an idea of that, I had time to walk across the parking lot and ask another group of people if they saw the same thing and get back before it disappeared.
You're kidding.
So, it took quite a while to get across the sky.
I sure appreciate your report, sir. Thank you. And let's take one more quick one. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Gersten and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Dan from Clarkdale, Arizona.
Yes, Dan.
I'm listening to you on KAZM.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, I didn't see any lights, but we did have a power outage in the whole Verde Valley area, which is about 2 hours north of Phoenix.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and that includes the towns of Sedona and Camp Verde.
Sedona, Camp Verde, and where I am. Now, that's really interesting. How long did it last?
It lasted for approximately 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
And the lights went out at exactly 10:30.
10:30. What time is it where you are now?
Right now, it's 10 till 2.
10 till 2. Same as, so we're in sync.
Right.
10:30.
And there were occasional flashes of lightning in the sky. I didn't know if that had anything to do with it or not, but when I heard your show, I figured it was a little too coincidental.
It's a coincidental night, sir. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Peter, what a night for you to be on.
Great night. I'd like to know what that commercial pilot saw when these things flew over his plane.
How high above him he estimated they would have been, how quickly they passed him to estimate speed. And you notice Peter said that the commercial pilot said he actually turned to try and follow the objects.
Exactly.
But that there was almost no light behind them.
Exactly. Why would he turn to follow the objects, even if he wasn't a private plane?
Curiosity, I suppose.
Well, be an interesting person to talk to. If he's listening, let him call in.
Yeah, if he's listening, good luck on getting in. I mean, all the lines are jammed.
Yeah. But there's a...
I mean, this really does, though, point out why we want to know, what the hell is going on.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Now, these objects are interesting, and I don't remember similar types of reports. Peter Davenport indicated that they are similar to other reports, but if these were flying triangles, there'd be no question that these weren't rocket boosters. So, I don't know what these objects are, but they are definitely worth further inquiry.
Well, everybody in the world says the same thing. And earlier we were talking about the fact that we believe they are demonstrating something to us. But everybody in the world says the same thing. Well, look, why go through this cat and mouse game of demonstrations of things over big cities and demonstrations like we've had tonight? Why do that? Why not just land and make your presence known? Say, hi, we're from the Galactic Federation, and we're going to kill you all, or hi, we're going to save you all, or whatever it is. Why these obscure, wild demonstrations?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And possibly the answer is simple, in that we have to demonstrate that we as a species want to know the truth. It's almost like a programming. A slow time release program of presence. Mm. It's at night. Why not during the day? Why not make it obvious? It isn't obvious.
It is not. Indeed, it's not obvious.
Yeah, it's a slow indoctrination program until finally they get the mass of this life form, our species, to say, we want to know. But as of now, we don't have that. As I said to you earlier, I got one phone call from a radio station that was in Chicago that was wanted to know about the lawsuit. And basically, I was on for 3 minutes. What can you talk about in 3 minutes?
Not much.
There's
if the media would like to contact you, Peter,
yeah.
There's a really good question as we approach the top of this hour. If the media would like to comment, get comments from you on the lawsuit and do a story, which they ought to do. I mean, it's a really interesting story. How would they do that?
Well, the best way to do it is through the website. And on the website, they can contact me through email. I'd rather not give out my phone number because the last time I gave it out on your show, I started getting calls right away.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
And I don't want to do that now that I live in Scottsdale.
No, I wouldn't give it out.
No, so basically the best way to do it is through the website. But also for the people that, your listeners that do not have access to the Internet.
Yes.
They can subscribe to my offline newsletter called Cause and Effect, which is the highlights of what I write about online.
All right. How would they do that?
Well, it's a monthly newsletter, and they can subscribe to it. They can get 12 monthly issues for $20. We have to charge for that because of the postage and the printing.
Understood.
And basically, all they have to do is write to Cause, C-A-U-S, at 8624 East San, S-A-N, Bruno, B-R-U-N-O, Drive, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85258.
Okay, do it again.
That's Cause, C-A-U-S, 8624, East San Bruno Drive, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85258. So, whether you're online or offline, you can be kept aware of what Cause is doing.
All right, I didn't get the zip code.
85258.
258. All right, people write slow. It's Cause, C-A-U-S, 8624 East San Bruno Drive, Scottsdale, Arizona. Zip code 85258. 8258. All right, I wanted to get that before the hour ended. Peter, I always give my guests an opportunity to either stay over during the last hour of the program or to hit bed, their choice.
No, we'll stay over. I'm really curious about what's going on now, so anything that could shed some light onto it, I'm going to stay up and listen to.
Well, I'm sure we're going to continue to get reports, and I doubt all this is going to shake out until tomorrow. Now, it might be re-entering space junk from the Russians, but I don't know. Just about fully 50% of the reports that Peter's had tonight would dispute that, I think. And so it goes back to what you said. Why can't we call this an invasion? If it's not something that our military can tell us about, they're out there obviously chasing it, whatever it is, and they can't tell us about it. And they declare it's they don't investigate these things, they say, because they are not a threat to national security. But how could they not be?
The mere presence poses a threat. Otherwise, they wouldn't have scrambled jets. The reason they have to cover it up and come down with some kind of phony story shows that it must pose some kind of a threat. So the inherent quality of the phenomena poses a threat simply by the fact that we don't know what it is. So it's really strange, the reality that's going on here. In other words, we're told not only that it's Russian boosters, but it's not given the due that it should be. We're being kept in the dark. We're being kept in the secrecy, and it's possible that there's a news blackout on this.
What do you think we'll hear when we wake up tomorrow about what happened tonight?
I don't know. I don't know what the universe has planned for us. Possibly, something pretty interesting. You have to remember, the Phoenix Alliance, even though that occurred on March 13th of 97, it really didn't get full publicity until, 3, 4, 5 months later, when USA Today did a story, a front-page story on it. Then all of a sudden, you would think it happened yesterday.
That's right.
Also, what's interesting is 2 weeks ago, or last week, all of a sudden, an English newspaper did a story on a CIA report that was released at least, I think, in 1997 also. And that was played up as if it was released the other day. So that got a lot of attention. So who knows what the media, what the media's reasons are for.
It's like somebody turns a switch out there and they decide it's time to tell the story.
Yeah, exactly. And time doesn't matter. Time can be transcended. Reports from 2 years ago, all of a sudden, are current.
Peter, hold on. We'll be right back. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, my guests are Peter Gersten and Peter Davenport is back. I'm going to bring both of them up online and then read a couple of things to the two of them. Let's see if we can do this. Peter, Gersten, are you there?
I'm here.
And Mr. Davenport.
I am still here, Art.
All right. I want to read a couple of things, get your reaction, gentlemen. And this is a supposed press release from the Public Relations Office of Edwards Air Force Base at California. It may be a hoax, but let me read it to you. Tonight, at about 21:55 hours Pacific, aircraft from Edwards Air Force Base in California were scrambled in response to multiple radar images moving in a southerly direction from the central California area toward Edwards at plus Mach 5 speeds. Two USAF F-15 interceptors climbed to about 48,000 feet and did make radar contact, but were unable to confirm visual contact due to deteriorating weather conditions. Two more aircraft were scrambled from Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada when it was determined that the radar images were moving south toward the Arizona-Mexico border. Two F-16 tactical fighters also climbed to intercept altitude at about 50,000 feet, but were unable to make either radar or visual contact. All aircraft have now returned to their respective bases of operation. That's one item. Next, Art, I'm a deputy sheriff in Central Oregon. We got reports of an airplane going down in flames at, you guessed it, 21:31 hours. My sergeant saw the same thing at the same time, described it to me in great detail, headed southeast, got real bright, a piece fell away, and then the main part continued on, but dimmer. He was outside looking up as it went out of sight It was about the size of a satellite in a starry sky. That's the last image he saw. The first report, he says, said it took about 45 seconds to cross out of sight with the same heading, southeast. Art, I'm going back out to study the skies. And on and on and on it goes. Here's somebody reporting from, Seattle. Portland, saying indeed he too is observing F-15s scrambling. That was at about 11:30 p.m. And here's something from my affiliate in Santa Cruz, KSCO, AM 1080 in Santa Cruz. It says local radio talk show host Dave Allen, the Nighthawk, has had his board go haywire shortly after 9:30 p.m. So as whatever it was passed overhead, the board, the operational board of our affiliate in Santa Cruz, went berserk. And those are the reports I have. Peter, Davenport?
Yeah, that's a pretty unusual Russian booster that can knock out somebody's board in Santa Cruz when the objects are over Northern California and Oregon and Utah and perhaps Arizona. I'm intrigued by the news release by Edwards Air Force Base. They're, for all intents and purposes, admitting that this was not a Soviet Russian rocket.
If it's an accurate report. Now,
yes.
Somebody could have typed this up, obviously, and it may not be real. Somebody's going to have to check with Edwards and see if it's real.
Yeah.
I just now got it.
Yeah. It's interesting. One flaw I noticed in that report, it said the F-15s were at, 45,000 or 50,000 feet?
48,000 feet.
48,000 feet, but then it went on to say that weather was obscuring their view of these objects.
The weather should not have been that high.
Yeah, weather can go that high in rare circumstances, but my impression is, particularly given the weather conditions across the western United States...
Don't know what the ceiling is right now.
Yeah, we don't know, but... if somebody could report what the weather conditions are like near Edwards or in the environs down there, that would be a big help.
Mm-hmm.
Two things I can add to that, Art, if I may. Got a report about a half an hour ago from a gentleman who is sleeping in his truck at a major fueling center on I-5 in the vicinity of Portland International Airport. He says, I believe he said he used to serve on a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier. And he said what he saw, what he heard going out of Portland tonight took him back to his days on that aircraft carrier. He counted, I believe he said, 7 sorties going out between 9:30 and 10:30 tonight. So if they were still launching F-15s out of Portland at 10:30, approximately... That's a long time for
sure
a Russian
is.
Booster to be in the atmosphere.
Well, besides, it's an awful lot of assets to commit to something that you now know what it is and have known for some time. Russian
yes.
booster, right?
Yeah right. I finally found this tape of this young girl reporting from Richfield, Utah, which is sort of south central Utah. It's only about 30 seconds long. May I play this? It's rather interesting.
Go right ahead.
Here we are.
Okay.
And a very bright, very distinguishable round ball of light came across the top of the mountain, stopped at the very top of the mountain.
Stopped.
For about 2 to 3 seconds, and then broke off into 4 different lights, and went up, down, straight across, and just, like, went in several different directions.
Went in several different directions. Now, if the Russians are building boosters like that, we've got real trouble on this planet because that is sophisticated technology. This is the next generation MIRV warhead, I guess. But my impression at this time, and it's always subject to revision, of course, is that we're not dealing with a Russian booster. That is disinformation. And time will tell. We'll have to sort through all the reports, but it looks like something extremely bizarre happened over the western United States tonight.
This night. Well, I'm glad you were here to cover it with me, Peter. We've got another 40 minutes of show left, so if anything else dramatic comes in, get right back to me.
Will indeed, Art.
Okay, my friend, thank you. And Peter Gersten, again, thank you for being so patient through all of this.
No problem at all.
It's exactly, of course, really why you're doing what you're doing, isn't it?
Well, it's the major reason to find the truth, to end the secrecy. And I thought I was finished with the FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, but I guess I'm not finished.
Well, now, I was about to ask that. But as a matter of fact, that's where I was going. Now, we know exactly when this occurred. We have multiple reports. The very least it seems we could do is to file FOIA reports about what they got on radar or didn't get, what they scrambled, what assets they put in the air, and for what reason, couldn't we?
Well, I'm going to see Peter Davenport this weekend at the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Mateo, and I think we're going to sit down and coordinate this. And he's going to provide his reports, and we're going to submit certain FOIA requests.
Peter, in other words, could you make that specific request, since you knew what time it was and
yeah,
you knew
exactly.
what assets were used?
Yeah, exactly.
Would they have to answer that?
Oh, yeah. Basically, I did a request for the Phoenix Lights on behalf of Skywatch International, and they came back. They had no reports that they hadn't scrambled any jets, and they had no information. So we're going to do the same thing, and either they can say the same thing or they can tell us what the truth is.
What do you think? What do you think you'll get back? I mean, this is so damn public.
Well, first, I think we have to find out whether this press release from Edwards Air Force Base is legitimate or not. I have my suspicions.
I have my doubts.
Yeah, because just the admissions. How did you obtain this?
It was just faxed to me.
By an individual?
Yes.
Well
no. There's no fax return other than a date. There isn't. Let me see. I've got page 101, Wednesday, September 1st, 1999, 11:42:08 p.m. So that was some time ago. I don't know if it's real or not.
It just doesn't sound real. It's too good to be true, but it's too early in the whole episode, in the whole scenario to be coming out. Why would Edwards Air Force Base release, you know, some kind of information, and at night, no less? It just doesn't make sense. And there are too many admissions in it. But it might be like some type of information that's being leaked in this format, because whenever we get information like that, the messenger is always tainted. Question is whether the message is valid.
Yeah.
And
some of the rest of this, though, like the sheriff, who just sent me a fax, is definitely legit. My report, the report from my affiliate in Santa Cruz, AM 1080 KSCO, that's definitely legit stuff. I've confirmed all this. So,
well, there's no question that something was being seen, and it seems to from anywhere from 3 to 7 different objects over many hours over several states. I think it's amazing that there were coincidentally power blackouts and malfunctions of computers or switchboards or whatever it was in Seattle.
Yes.
You know, jets were scrambled. In other words, you can separate each of these pieces. Well, the jets were on routine maneuvers, and the power blackouts had to do with something entirely different.
Yeah.
And it was the Russian, booster that came down.
And all of this was highly coincidental.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's just take some random phone calls now, Peter, and see what people have on their minds. First time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Gerson and Art Bell.
Oh.
Hello.
Yeah, this is John from Edwards Air Force Base. I used to be stationed out there.
Yes, John.
We have no alert aircraft out there. There are small experimental aircraft or chase planes. And you guys are talking about Portland, Oregon?
Yes.
There's no alert aircraft. The nearest Zulu alert aircraft is at McCord Air Force Base. Only I can think of what's going on out there at Portland Air Force Base, or Portland, is they're having a probably an ORI or something like that, or they're doing their night training.
All right. Well, have you heard anything about this massive sighting tonight?
Yeah, I have. But as far as the location of your alert aircraft or anything like that, that sounds bogus to me. And plus,
all right.
The weather out here by Edwards Air Force Base?
Yes.
It's clear. It's smoky from the fires, but it's clear out here.
All right. Did you see any alert aircraft leave Edwards at about that time?
No, not tonight.
Very interesting. Are you in a truck?
Yes, I am.
All right. I appreciate the report, sir. Thank you. He knew about the object sighting, but doesn't confirm any of the
It's just...
The alert aircraft. That's
it's just so confusing. There's so much disinformation and misinformation and secrecy that if anybody tells you they know what's really going on, I'd be very suspicious.
It really is hard to begin to discern what's reality and what's disinformation. My God, we live in a strange age of mass communication and miscommunication.
Exactly.
And intentional miscommunication.
It's amazing. And tomorrow morning we're going to get up and get tomorrow's newspaper and you're going to see the same headlines that you do every day.
Yeah, Clinton's buying a house in New York and stuff.
Yeah.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Peter Gersten and Art Bell. Hi.
Yeah, this is Alan from Salem.
Hello, Alan.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention several months ago, my brother who lives in Sacramento, his whole family were eating supper and they saw a UFO in the north part of the sky in Sacramento.